You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
February the 13th, 2020, impeach Donald Trump, round two. At least they're talking about it. They're talking about it because he weighed in with his opinion on a tweet regarding the punishment given Roger Stone, a former Trump colleague and friend, and apparently still possibly a friend, I'm sure he is. And immediately, the left started saying that he's trying to influence the judge who's going to pronounce the sentence. Attorney General Barr has already said, look, the sentence that was already recommended is too much. Is too much and should be reevaluated. I will have to admit, when I first heard this story breaking the other day, and I kind of watched it for a while, looked at it again yesterday, when I hear the president complain about some wrong and someone's being maligned because of a political scheme, I take a close look at it. I don't always jump on board. And I have a problem with the president of the United States getting involved in any open investigation or anything along that line. I do. However, as we look at this and we begin to get more facts, there are clearly some big problems with how that Roger Stone case was handled. The forewoman of the jury, clearly biased. How do you get someone so biased to sit in judgment of a man facing charges, especially since this jurist was biased against Trump? And knowing that Roger Stone was a former associate of Trump. How does that person even get cleared to get on the jury would be the first question. Secondly, why would this not be reason to just throw the whole thing out and start over again or just put it aside? We're going to get into that in more detail because there are a lot of different factors involved here. And I'm also going to remind you that Obama was involved in numerous cases, open investigations, pushing his view, his agenda, and putting his own pressure on investigators. I'll give you the first clear example that should be known to much of this immediate audience would be Ferguson. When the shooting of Michael Brown went down in Ferguson, and President Obama decided to send in his Attorney General, Eric Holder, to take a look at the case. This was another case, obviously, of a police officer shooting a white officer, a black suspect shot and killed. You send the attorney general in. You do that only when you're trying to make a statement and interfere. And that's exactly what Obama was doing. He did the same thing with the Trayvon Martin case when that came out. He was quick to get in and say, well, if I'd had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin. Therein puts a focus, a hot beam spotlight on the case and what happens next. We'll get into all this. Former U.S. Congressman from New York, John LeBoutier, will join us on his view of what Iowa and New Hampshire mean and where we go from here. And I'll ask him about his opinion and Trump and the Stone case. Senator Bernie Sanders calling out James Carville. Carville, of course, formerly serving as a political analyst to get Bill Clinton elected, who's been claiming that Bernie is basically forming a cult that cannot be elected. Carville saying, I don't want to be part of a cult. That's what Bernie's doing. They're not going to do anything but destroy the Democrat Party. And I don't like it because I'm from Louisiana and I don't like what Bernie's doing. That's my tame impression of James Carville. I'll get more wound up once we get to that story. But Bernie, he's firing back at Carville. And what he says about Carville, ooh, I would love to be there when Carville hears those words. Because I know James Carville. He'll get all the way back, right back in your face, you know? That'll be coming up. And also, before we wrap up the next 2 hours, the New York president of the Black Lives Matter movement not only says that riots are a way to be heard, but is endorsing rioting, rioting across the nation. Do I hear any of the leftists speaking out and saying, no, that's not right, we shouldn't do that, back off? Or do I hear them saying, light the torches, let's go? We've got a lot to cover for you for the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Wellington Environmental specializes in making your world safer, finding, removing threats to your health. In one facility, occupants were getting sick, but only in one portion of a building. And Wellington Environmental was asked to investigate and soon found air conditioning units in the rooms only in that side of the building were blowing cold air loaded with mold. The AC units in that part of the building were pulling air from a stagnant pond. Mystery solved, threat resolved. That's just one of many Wellington Environmental stories. And then there's a hospital that was going to have to close because of a water main break until Wellington stepped in to help. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
They treated Roger Stone very badly. They treated everybody very badly. I want to thank the Justice Department for seeing this horrible thing. And I didn't speak to him, by the way, just so you understand. They saw the horribleness of a 9-year sentence for doing nothing. You have murderers and drug addicts, they don't get 9 years.
That is President Trump addressing the possible sentence facing Roger Stone. He's to be sentenced by the judge the 20th of this month. All right, let's back up and retract for you quickly. Roger Stone had been convicted on 7 counts of obstruction, witness tampering, making false statements to Congress, perjury, on charges stemming from the former special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. And there was also an added ingredient that he had tampered with the witness, and I just mentioned that witness tampering in the sense that he'd made some remark to one of the prosecutors or something that, you know, I might come get your dog. And they took that as witness tampering. Give me a break. But the bottom line is, when Trump starts speaking about it, immediately the Democrats start rallying around the impeachment flag, running at the poll again, because this is where we're going to be going. Now, Trump has the authority to step forward and simply pardon Stone, regardless what the judge does. Has not said he's going to do so one way or the other. But he did say, I want to thank the Justice Department, and I didn't speak to them, by the way. They saw a 9-year sentence, 9 years for something nobody could even define what he did. They put a man in jail, destroyed his life, his family, and his wife. So he spoke out on it. Well, the very fact he spoke out, made some remarks about it, certainly gave Democrats a chance to rally around that impeachment flag again. And in fact, Democrat Congressman Eric Swalwell, being questioned on an NBC program, was asked specifically, does this open that door?
Might you impeach him over this, over Roger Stone in the sentencing?
You know, we're not going to take our options off the table. We're not going to let him just, you know, torch this democracy because he thinks that he's been let off once and we're not going to do something about it.
In other words, Trump got away with the first impeachment because we couldn't prove anything, and he might think he'd get away, but we're not going to let him torch this place. Not going to take our options off the table. We don't wake up in the morning wanting to impeach him. That's a flat-out lie. That is a lie. Most Democrats wake up every morning. What can we do today to impeach Donald Trump? And can we do it before the election of 2020? And they're, believe me, they're looking for options. So this is one of the options now on the table. Of course, Senator Elizabeth Warren, running for the White House, wanted to get into it as well. Congress must act immediately to rein in our lawless attorney general, turning her attention to the Attorney General William Barr, because Barr had said in overruling the prosecutor's reference or their recommendation in the case. Federal prosecutors had recommended a sentence of 87 to 108 months in prison on those seven counts. Well, the Justice Department, under Barr, overruled the prosecutors, scaling back the proposed sentence. And some Democrats immediately said, there you go, Trump is interfering, Barr is interfering. And you had four of the prosecutors simply walk off the job, saying, we're not going to stand here and be treated like this. We're for legal justice, and this is political partisan hacksmanship. Listen, we have just witnessed for the last 2.5 years, and evidence is coming out on a continuing basis, and it's not yet all uncovered. The scam that was going on and being perpetuated by members of the Justice Department under Obama administration and the FBI under FBI Director Comey at the time and McCabe and the others, what they were doing behind the scenes, along with the help of the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign to destroy Donald Trump, and then once he got in office, what we could do to get rid of him. You have to take everything said by either side, with a grain of salt. But when it comes to the remark by Congressman Swalwell that we're not taking that options off the table, well, Congressman Doug Collins, Republican of Georgia, says, you know what, maybe we need to look at something else while you're doing all of this.
This is nothing but the deep state lashing out again, saying we didn't get anything during Mueller. We didn't get any crossfire hurricane. In fact, with the problems of crossfire hurricane, why don't we go back and actually begin to look at this entire process with a corrupt cabal of Comey, McCabe, Page, Strzok, Brennan, Clapper?
Yeah. You want to open this up? Let us just get back in all of it. That hurricane crossfire, part of the inquiry into the Trump campaign and the Trump associates. If Roger Stone committed perjury, and same thing with Michael Flynn, and it can be shown that it was not a trap question, which they can set up, then he's probably got to serve some time. But the amount of sentence time that they were proposing, harsh, way more punitive than necessary, and far outstretching the bounds of what we see for actual crimes of assault, drugs, things of that nature. And then we come to this little, tiny, little fact, very, very little thing. Maybe it shouldn't even be mentioned, but I'm going to. The four-person of the jury that convicted Roger Stone last year has a history of Democrat activism and numerous anti-Trump left-wing social media posts. In fact, she is Tomika Hart, a former Memphis City Schools Board president who served as the foreman of that jury. She even posted specifically about the Stone case before she voted to convict. She retweeted an argument mocking those who considered Stone's dramatic arrest in a pre-dawn raid. Remember that? A federal tactical team surrounding his house early morning hours, coming through the door, taking this. This guy was going to pose a threat for them. They had to pull a tact team in. They did it because they knew the publicity would be great. Someone along the line said, this is a bad, nasty guy. He's like a narco king. It's Roger Stone. The worst thing he could do is dress in a leisure suit. But they all ran in with their SWAT team like this guy. I'm surprised they didn't set off flashbang grenades. Now, I'm not criticizing the SWAT team. They're doing what they were ordered to do. I'm looking at higher up the chain where they said, let's just don't go to arrest him. We could knock on his door and say, come on out, get in the car with us. Let's storm the house, pretty much. And this four-person of the jury that ended up convicting Roger Stone, before she voted to convict, posted an argument mocking those who considered the arrest to be excessive force. And she also suggested President Trump and his supporters are racist. And she praised the investigation conducted by Special Counsel Mueller, which led to Stone's prosecution. How in the hell does someone like this get on the jury to begin with, then serve as a four-person, and no one calls out and says, foul, it's wrong? You do know, if you've ever gone in for trial duty and so forth, and they're talking to you in the voir dire about putting you on the panel for a jury, do you know any of the defendants listed here? No. Do you have any relatives or whatever related to any of them? No. Do you have any past crimes you might have been involved? No. Do you have anyone in law enforcement? Oh, well, I got an uncle who's a police officer. And the defense may say, strike this person. And no one said that your uncle was going to influence your decision, but that casual relationship with someone in law enforcement might be just enough to have you swing to the prosecution side, so the defense wants you out of there. Or they might decide, yeah, we want someone like that in here. But this person was cleared for the jury and then became the four-person and was putting out these tweets and remarks. The prosecutors have objected because senior Department of Justice officials overrode their recommendation that Stone face up to 9 years in prison. Barr is saying, take a look at it again. We're going to suggest 2 to 3 years for what he's facing on charges. Now, when Trump decided to tweet out his belief that something is wrong about this, one of his long staunch supporters, Trey Gowdy, no longer a member of Congress, and I truly regret that. I wish he were, but now he serves as an analyst for Fox News. And Gowdy was a prosecutor at one time. He didn't really take kindly and accept Trump doing that anyway.
I've had the same position, whether it was Barack Obama or Donald Trump. I do not think the chief executive should be weighing in on ongoing investigations or criminal prosecutions. That was my position with President Obama when he weighed in on the not a smidgen of corruption. It's my position now. I can tell you this, Bill Barr was aware of this recommendation before President Trump ever tweeted a single syllable, a single character. So the notion that Bill Barr was somehow motivated to move because of this tweet is just factually wrong.
Absolutely. And he's correct. The attorney general knew what the recommendation was before Trump got on the tweet machine. And I agree with Trey Gowdy. Trump should have not said anything about it. And we are, before we wrap this hour, we're going to take you back and show you specific cases where Obama interjected from the White House into open investigations. And when the president sends a message or gets involved, it changes the landscape entirely. It did with Obama. It is with Trump. And I agree with Gowdy. He should have just stayed away from it. But in the midst of this, while the attorney general, and you just heard Gowdy say, and I know he's correct, the Attorney General Barr already knew what the recommendation was for and what was involved before Trump got involved. And Barr had suggested, let's pull this back. This guy should not spend 7 to 9 years in prison on these kinds of charges. So now we got the Democrats coming forward saying, well, you know what? Not only should we think about impeaching Trump, maybe we need to get rid of Barr. Here's Senator Schumer on the floor of the Senate.
What is more swampy? What is more fetid? What is more stinking than the most powerful person in the country literally changing the rules to benefit a crony guilty of breaking the law?
Well, you know what, Senator Schumer? I would agree with everything you just said. Would you mind turning the camera back toward the Democrat Party and Hillary Clinton and Loretta Lynch, when she served as Attorney General under Obama, would you mind raising the question that what's more stinky and more swampy than what we saw in that case? But here he comes, and also Senator Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, saying Barr should be ashamed, embarrassed, and that it was another example of political interference. Senator Elizabeth Warren saying Barr should resign or face impeachment. Trey Gowdy does not mince words on his view of what they're talking about.
Prosecutors don't sentence people. Presidents don't sentence people. Fox News commentators don't sentence people. Judges do. And we give them life tenure so they can make these calls. But the notion that Bill Barr should resign is about the dumbest damn thing I have ever heard. If a United States senator really believes that the head of the Department of Justice cannot weigh in on what a proportional sentence is, I mean, there are child pornographers who don't get 9 years, Martha. There are people who rob banks and don't get 9 years. So let the judge decide. I think 2 or 3 years is about right.
And again, that's Trey Gowdy, former prosecutor. Now, if you're really trying to be honest and be unbiased, listen to what he said. News commentators don't decide the sentence. News anchors don't. Presidents don't. The judge. The prosecutor makes a recommendation, but the judge makes a decision. But you would think that Donald Trump has just thrown out all our laws simply because of this newest noise. So this thing he just survived, the impeachment, what kind of impact is that having? Please stand by.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. Redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
So last week, President Trump acquitted on charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress in the so-called impeachment sham presented by the Democrats. And I will tell you, my guest coming up in the next segment, John LaBoutière, a Republican, former U.S. Congressman, a Reaganite. He thought the impeachment was going to nail Trump. I know he did. And I can't wait to hear what he's got to think about it, because we didn't get a chance right after that to get with him because he had some family issues. But I'm looking forward to doing that. That's in the next segment. But it's done. So what kind of impact has it had? I mean, the whole intent of the Democrats was do whatever we can to get Trump out of office, hopefully before 2020, or at least destroy him so he can't be reelected. Did it do any of that? Well, it didn't get him out of office. Did it destroy him? Did it hurt him? The 2020 campaign manager for Trump, Brad Parscale, said, "The Democrats' shameful impeachment hoax and dumpster fire primary process," talking about Iowa, the Iowa chaos. Oh, I'm sorry, caucus. I always get it confused now. Iowa chaos or Iowa caucus? Same thing. Anyways, in the dumpster fire primary process, they've only contributed to a record-breaking financial support for President Trump's re-election. With President Trump's accomplishments, our massive data and ground operations, our strong fundraising numbers, this campaign is going to be unstoppable in 2020. The Trump campaign and its fundraising committees and the Republican National Committee reported that they have raised $60.6 million combined in January with more than $200 million cash on hand. In other words, they brought in $60 million during the impeachment trial. Thank you, Democrats. You might as well have written out a check for Donald Trump. Now, President Trump was asked What did you learn after all this was done? This question came up on C-SPAN. Some Republicans have said they hoped you would learn a lesson from impeachment. What lesson did you learn from impeachment? Here comes the answer. That the Democrats are crooked. That they shouldn't have brought impeachment. And my poll numbers are 10 points higher. And that's true. His numbers are going up and climbing up because the whole thing blew up in the face of the Democrats. In fact, some of the latest numbers, let's see if I have my latest numbers here. Well, I know we had a Quinnipiac study that just came out the other day. I want to say it came out Monday. I could be wrong about that, but basically said 60%+. I think it's higher than that, actually, believe that Trump was going to be reelected. Aside from Trump, look at the other side of the aisle. Who do the Democrats have that can really put up a run against him? You want to play owl for a moment? Who? Nobody. We're going to be talking about how President Obama had gotten involved in active investigations before we wrap up this hour. But we're going to take a break now, and we'll be back with my guest, John LaBoutière, and his take on the Iowa chaos and New Hampshire election, and then Roger Stone and Trump.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, and I've been sleeping like a log. But when I get on with you, I find the things that you do make me feel alright. Oh, I work hard.
This is Larry Connors USA.
We welcome back John LaBoutière, former U.S. Congressman. The last time we had you on, we had a piece of music by the Stones introducing you, and you had a personal connection, your family did, to Mick Jagger. Any connections to the Beatles?
Well, funny, because when you played that, I thought I got to tell Larry that in 1966, on their last tour ever, they played for the second time in their lives. They played Shea Stadium, and I was 13, and we went, my father, mother, brother, couple sisters, we all went to Shea Stadium to see this unbelievable spectacle. And they set them up on second base on a stage. The place is packed, 55,000, mostly young girls.
Yeah.
Screaming at the top of their lungs, Larry. And Bobby Hebb was the opening act, who did Sonny. Remember Sonny?
Right, Sonny? Sure.
And yeah, and then they had the whoever did another song, Pink Balloon or whatever it's called. They were the opening acts. And then out come the Beatles. And they only played for about 40 minutes. And if you really strained, you could maybe make out what the song was. That's how bad. And my father, who, this is 66, so he's 53 years old by then. And he's not into the Beatles, you know, but he's watching this whole thing. And what was going on the field is girls are jumping off out of the stands, sprinting across the Shea Stadium outfield or infield to get to the Beatles. And blue uniform New York City cops are chasing them down and tackling these girls. And my father said, really, the only entertainment here is watching that. Yeah. And then there's a great documentary out called 8 Days a Week by Ron Howard about the Beatles on tour.
Yeah.
And that was their last tour, as I said.
We may have to go through the old footage and see if we see you somewhere in the stands.
You're not going to see me. Yeah, you're not going to see me.
All right, I've got a lot of material to cover for you. First of all, I don't know if the audience has had a chance to make. I want to make sure they get your take on the impeachment sham now that it's over and Trump was found guilty of nothing. Right?
He was not found guilty. He was impeached in the House and not found guilty in the Senate. Now, that doesn't mean he did nothing. It just means they didn't get 67 senators to remove him.
Well, is that like you go to trial and they don't prosecute you, they don't get a conviction on you, and you walk out and somebody says, yeah, but we still think he did it? I mean, I'll go with OJ, but I have to accept the fact is the law said he was innocent.
Correct, because the jury found him innocent. No, they found him not guilty. And here, I mean, it's still whoever wants to judge. I mean, I just had a talk last time with a Republican friend of mine who said, look, Trump did what he was accused of, but it doesn't warrant being removed from office.
Bang. That's a big point.
That's a very, very legitimate argument.
That's a big point.
I think most Republicans have that opinion.
All right, I want to jump you to another subject, the Roger Stone story, and with his involvement now that the Attorney General obviously suggesting the term being proposed for Roger Stone was way too much for it, and you've got many saying that Trump is trying to use his office to influence this, and they're looking for another impeachment possibility.
Well, I don't think that. I think, look, Trump made it clear by Twitter, he tweeted out when it was on the news that day that he thought the ask of 7 to 9 years was too much. And he went nuts over it publicly. God knows what he did privately. Next thing you know, Barr's handpicked temporary U.S. attorney in D.C. Overrules the four prosecutors who are handling the case, all of whom then quit. So there's some tension inside justice over people from above coming down and overruling the way they're running the case, which is not supposed to be done and isn't usually done. And certainly a president shouldn't be influencing the sentencing recommendations
of federal prosecutors.
If that's the case, then the system's not working right.
But the Attorney General does have his own right to tell his underlings, hey, you guys are pushing too hard on that. That's not right. Trey Gowdy was appearing on one of the programs previously, and of course, former prosecutor and congressman. And he said, I don't think any president should get involved in anything like this, any open cases, which I agree with you. But he said, Barr has every right to make a recommendation or change his staff. The judge is still going to be the one who decides the 20th of this month.
That is correct, a week from today. And she may, between now and that sentencing hearing, call in people from the Justice Department, may call in the four prosecutors who asked out of the case to find out what went on here. Was undue pressure put on? Why was it done? You know, but you're right. Ultimately, it's a different branch of government that does the sentencing. Stupidly, Larry, Trump is attacking her in tweets this week.
Why is he attacking a federal judge?
She happened to be in my class in college. I didn't know her, but these people.
Was she smarter than you?
That's not hard.
All right, let me move on to something else. How about the Iowa chaos? Oh, I'm sorry, they're supposed to say caucus, but the Iowa chaos in New Hampshire. What actually did the Democrats – what do you see coming out of it that means anything that the Democrats can win and beat Trump?
Okay, so I think we know what happened in Iowa. It was a total mess, and that's the end, by the way, of the Iowa caucus being – the kickoff event in future presidential races. They kill themselves. We probably will go back to the New Hampshire primary. We'll get first in the nation because it's well run. It's not representative of the country, but it is an event that has a lot of influence, and they'll keep it. And what did we learn this week? Bernie Sanders isn't as overwhelming a favorite as the media thought he was. The anti-Bernie movement, or if you want to call it that, in other words, three-quarters of the voters up there voted for somebody other than Bernie Sanders. So I think the race is just beginning. It's wide open. And I think the specter of Mike Bloomberg hovers over the whole thing.
Well, let's look at that, because you said, the top five out of New Hampshire primary, I'm looking at some notations pulled together, that Sanders and Warren, being considered the more progressive, got just over 35% of the vote between the two of them.
Yeah.
Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and Biden getting 53. Biden left before that victory party that night. He knew he was done. He's trying to go to South Carolina, pick it up on the 29th. Super Tuesday coming March 30 is when Bloomberg's impact's really going to be felt. So is that going to be the candidate that we're going to see the Democrats pushing forward?
I think so, because of the money. You know, I mean, he's let's go over Super Tuesday for your listeners. There are 15 states voting on March 3rd. There are 1,500 delegates out of 4,000 will be picked on that day. I mean, huge, you know, 38% or whatever of the whole thing in one day. Bloomberg is spending like mad, campaigning all over these things, has 2,000 paid field staff in those states, 150 offices, spending $1 million a day on Facebook ads and $300 million on television.
And he got the DNC to restructure the debate so he could be on the debate stage again.
That's right. This coming Wednesday night, the 20th.
So are we looking at when we get to the Democrat convention that you're going to end up having a brokered convention, or are we going to have a clear winner from the Democrats and they're going to accept it?
I think they'll accept it, whatever it is, because I think the unifying thing for them is beating Trump. But it's not going to be a straight line either way from now to the convention. We haven't had one of these brokered deals in 70 years or whatever.
Does that go down? I was just getting ready to say it has been.
Okay, so here's what I understand this year as opposed to the past. There are about 800 super delegates who are party people, congressmen, governors, senators, 800 of them.
And they only have that in the Democrat Party, folks. Go ahead.
Correct. And this time, unlike last time, the superdelegates cannot vote on the first ballot at the convention. The only delegates who vote on the first ballot are the ones selected through the primaries and caucuses, of which there are just shy of 4,000. You need 1,991 to win the nomination. And they can't vote on the first ballot. So the Bloomberg plan, obviously, is to get to 1991. But if he can't get there, is to deprive anybody else of 1991 on the first ballot. Boom, you go to the second ballot. The 800 superdelegates can vote. They are party people. They don't dig Bernie Sanders, who's not even a Democrat. He's an independent. The thought is they will tip it to Bloomberg at that point, if it takes that long.
Yeah, and you've had Carbo claiming all the time Bernie's nothing but a cult. We've got your last 30 seconds here. Biden is just riding off into the sunset.
Gone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he gets a shot at Nevada, and I don't know that Bernie will do great in Nevada and South Carolina. I think this thing is still stumbling
along.
Is
California going to be the key point? If Buttigieg can carry California? Yeah.
Buttigieg is not carrying California because Bernie is ahead in California. It's, by the way, it's every congressional district picks the delegates mostly. Right. So on that day, there are 150 congressional districts on Super Tuesday around the 15 states.
John, I got to cut it there. We're coming up on a hard break. As always, we appreciate it. We will do it again.
Too.
We will do it again soon, sir.
I hope so. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, John. And a great story about the Beatles, by the way. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I'll tell you the numerous times Obama got involved in active investigations.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
USA.
So President Trump is under attack by Democrats, saying he's trying to interfere in the sentencing of Roger Stone, who had worked with him. Stone found guilty on numerous case charges, but Attorney General Barr said the prosecutors, his own office, had recommended sentencing guidelines way too high, 7 to 9 years, when 2 to 3 years should be adequate. The judge will make the decision come the 20th of this month, but because Barr stepped in and decided to roll back the recommendations, 4 of his prosecutors left the office, and the complaint is, again, that Trump should face impeachment again because he's getting involved in this, in an active investigation. Let me take you back in history for a moment. Barack Obama. You remember, I'm sure you do, but let me refresh your memory. What happened July 2009 at Cambridge, Massachusetts, a professor had locked himself out of his home. He forced the door open. A neighbor saw this happening, did not know the professor lived there, just saw a black man forcing a door open, calls police. Police show up. The confrontation starts after the sergeant arrived and asked for ID. Now, in a news conference several days later, Obama admitted he did not have all the facts, but still accused the police of racism. Listen, his remarks, "I don't know, not having been there, not seeing all the facts," that should be enough reason to stop right there. "But not seeing all the facts, what role race played in that, but I think it's fair to say, number one, any of us would be pretty angry. Number two, that the Cambridge police acted stupidly and arresting somebody when there's already proof that they were in their own home." He just admitted, "I don't have all the facts, but I'm going to tell you right now, police acted stupidly, and two, it was wrong." He added number three. He said, "The long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately." And, of course, that was a trigger for many others to say, "See, there we go again. White police officers going after minority groups." Cambridge police admit they were hurt and angered by the words. You know how the president tried to smooth it over? He got the sergeant and the professor to come to the White House. Remember the beer summit? But that was just one of the many times Obama would get involved in cases. I mentioned earlier in my opening monologue, the Trayvon Martin murder case, when he said, "You know, that he could have been my son. If I'd had a son, it could have been Trayvon Martin." Well, that immediately put pressure on the prosecutors to go after George Zimmerman. And, of course, when he got involved in the Ferguson shooting, sending in the attorney general, a black man at the time, Eric Holder, into Ferguson because a black man had been shot by a police officer, a white officer. Those are cases where clearly Obama got involved. And if you were going to call out Trump for right now trying to manipulate or use his position to redirect attention or bring attention in a hot heat wave of a laser into the process of the Roger Stone sentencing, you cannot deny these with Trump, that Obama did. Not one of them. And that's not the only, those are not the only ones. Those are just a few. In 2013, a Navy judge had ruled that Obama exerted unlawful command influence. This is a Navy judge, because he had made harsh comments about the punishment he expected the military was going to issue against someone accused of sexual harassment. As a result, the judge ruled out dishonorable discharge as a potential punishment. And later, the conviction of the Marine Staff Sergeant was thrown out because of the possible influence of the president's words. New York Times reported that the FBI in 2015 saw an instance where the president was trying to influence the outcome of a continuing investigation, that case being when he told CBS News that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's use of an unsecured private email server for her official communications may have been, quote, a mistake, but I don't think it posed a national security problem. In other words, as far as he was concerned, I'm done with it. There's no national security issue. We all should walk away from it. Well, of course, we didn't. We continued, quote, an investigation. But under Comey and the rest of the FBI partisans at the time, it was not really an investigation. And they end up whitewashing it anyway, saying that we found, yes, you made numerous mistakes, she lied and everything else, but we're going to overlook perjury, as they did not do a Roger Stone in this case. We're going to overlook the fact that she violated national security protocol, as she did, and we're just simply going to say it's just not worth to go ahead and have a prosecution. Why? Because there's Hillary Clinton, and they were all bought in with the Democrats. So you can mock and go after Trump, and I'm not happy with him making his remarks about the punishment coming up on Roger Stone. Trump still has a right to issue a full pardon if he wants to. But don't get involved in those things. And Obama shouldn't have either. No president should. Next hour coming up, Carville and Sanders. Carville says Sanders is nothing but a cult. Sanders has some words about Carville. And then a Black Lives Matter activist says riots are good, and we can achieve what we want through rioting. And maybe that's what we should continue to do. Plus a claim that a kid's television program is capitalist propaganda, exposing your child to the American way of life. When we continue.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.